The impetus for this project or work came from something I read a few years ago, and it was the epilogue of the book by Denlinger, Summers, and Nelson, Photoperiodism and Biological Calendar. And I'm just sort of putting some bullets in here of what they talked about. They talked photoperiodism coordinates development with the seasonal environment. Okay? Bud break in spring is temperature-driven, and rapid temperature change implies current photoperiodic signals may be inappropriate for identification of most suitable time for growth. Okay, so we're looking ahead, planning ahead a little bit, and then they also said we better get some work done on this kind of stuff. We better start looking at this as an active area of research, because things may be changing rapidly, and I think we're seeing some of that right now, you know. And so how are our plants going to react to that? And I immediately thought of switchgrass. They didn't say switchgrass in particular. But I thought we have switchgrass that's pretty ecotypic. And at the same time, it seems to be pretty flexible in its photoperiodic responses to things. So so the question then arises is how would summer switchgrass, we like summer, everybody's heard of summer switchgrass, and it's kind of famous. It's one of the parents in the hybrid breeding programs for the most part. Behave if a crucial climatic variable, in this case temperature, was dramatically changed in its area of adaptation to the ambient photoperiod. Okay, so what if it got really warm in South Dakota? Okay, so we have summer, which is ideally adapted to our region. It goes pretty good even north to the Canadian border and down into Nebraska ways. So pretty widely adapted. So to answer that question, we devised a system here. So we had a space plant nursery of summer that was pretty old, planted in 2008 at Brookings. Summer is from Nebraska City. That's where the original population was, from which it was collected. And Brookings is about 4 degrees north of that. Okay, so it's still very, very well adapted to that region. 4 collection dates were taken to go out in the field and collect stuff, because we wanted to bring in stuff that would be just going into dormancy, and so would be in a deep dormancy, and then go through the winter, and then stuff that was just ready to come out of dormancy. And so we're going to bring that in, and then we're going to put it in a warm environment. And so the only warm environment that we have is a greenhouse, okay? And the only ambient light source we have that we would be, well, we have an ambient light source, of course, which would be the solar radiation. But at the same time, we'd have to keep the greenhouse warm, and then we could evaluate this in some sort of how this summer would respond to increased temperature, having come in just through a period of dormancy. So at each date, we collected 2 different genotypes, divided them into several ramets, transplanted and standing pot and mixture, put them in pots, and then water and fertilized if needed. And then our temperature treatment here was... we could control the night temperature pretty well, but the day temperature we couldn't do so well on. So we had quite a, but that's okay, I think, because we're looking at here, for ambient light, and we should have a diurnal fluctuation in the temperature as well. It may not be totally accurate, but at least there's some change in temperature going through the day and night periods. Okay, so then we we've gone through 4 growth cycles. I'm not so sure we're going to keep going on this, but it's kind of interesting. So we've gone through 4 growth cycles. The 2013 growing season, I should go back to that. Okay, so the early dormancy is off October. It's just gone into dormancy, and then it's still in very deep dormancy in December. January is coming out, because you can tell how deep dormancy is by bringing them in and warming them up and see how long it takes before they break dormancy. Okay, it's for the tillers start to emerge. And by the 7th of April, you bring a switchgrass plant in, bring summer in 5 days it's up. Okay, so the tillers are coming up. Okay, so the 4 growth cycles that we were going to evaluate were 2000 growing season, which we harvested 1 September 2013. And then there was a regrowth after that. Okay, so then we watched the behavior of that regrowth in that warm temperature too. Then the 2014 growing season, we harvested that as it was stockpiled over in the greenhouse and harvested in the following January. Same thing with the 2015 growing season. Now the 2016 growing season, so we had two reps of each growth cycle that we were looking at. Then we went and we harvested that at the end of August, and we've now got regrowth going on likely through December. Okay, so the data that we're collecting is phenology, heading, flowering, and dormancy, just some dates and times, and disease. Smut is pretty interesting here, the way it's interacting with the photoperiod and the warm environment. And we're also going to collect reproductive trait data to show the vigor of these plants as we keep going on for several cycles of growth in a warm environment with an ambient photoperiod. Okay, so the results so far, and in the warm environment and ambient photoperiod, summer switchgrass produced reproductive tillers and higher reproductive tiller ratio from April to June. So it has moved up its life cycle. So now it is emerging in March and flowering in April and May and all the way through June. This is much earlier than it would be in its natural setting in the natural environment, which would be predominantly late July, early August. Thus, the summer plants appear to have adaptive potential temperature change, albeit extreme. So we're not saying that this is a temperature that's going to probably come about as a result of climate change too quickly, but at the same time, it provides a measure of that potential. So once acclimated to the warm environment, these plants did not green up in spring until photoperiod was long enough for floral induction over four growth cycles. But that photoperiod was long enough in March, okay? So we're talking about probably less than 12 hours, and these switchgrass plants have reacted to that and can carry on a sexual reproductive cycle. So genetic variability among these genotypes for morphology, disease expression, and fall dormancy was consistent across growth cycles. So we started in fall, we brought in material, went through all the stages of dormancy, and now these plants are all acting alike. And that's not too surprising, but we went through that dormancy thing just thinking that, okay, maybe there was some long-lasting effect when we broke the dormancy on those ones with different degrees of dormancy. Okay, so this just shows there's growth cycle variability. And so starting on the left, that's the 213, 214, 215, and 216. Those are the growth cycles there. That's one genotype, one ramet, and four growth cycles. So that, just to show the kind of variation we have. Some of this, the growth variation you see there, especially in the two middle years, is probably due to pot size. So now, as I look at this whole experiment, pot size is probably one of the restricting things on how big your plants are going to get and how well they're going to express their reproductive potential. There's genotypic variability, definitely. So morphological differences between genotypes among and within collection dates consistent across growth cycles. So there's one genotype on the left there, two growth cycles, and another genotype, the same two growth cycles. So you can see the morphology, the height, the size of the panicle, all those different things that you would look to as morphological indicators. And that's also consistent across growth cycles. Another kind of interesting aspect of this is that the morphological variability among tillers within a ramet is related to time of heading. So tillers that headed in late mid-June in the center were taller with larger panicles than those that headed earlier to the left, April and May, or those that that headed at the latter part of the tillering cycle. So that's probably that would indicate that the optimum time for producing large tillers with large inflorescences was during that about that mid-June time, longest days of the year. Okay, so this is just initial growth from March through August back and regrowth, 26th of August through November, of six genotypes of summer switchgrass and ambient lighter brooking. So that just shows, now we show both stages, the accumulation and stockpiling treatment in the back, and then these are the same genotypes. So the one that's been, you see the regrowth on, in the foreground, then that's the same genotype in the background there. Okay, so evaluating dormancy in switchgrass is kind of an interesting thing. The upper left hand, there's dormancy symptoms in ornamental switchgrass pre-frost at Brookings. So to me, it's just a general yellowing of the, starts at the on the bottom leaves and then moves relatively rapidly depending on what the temperatures are. But once it starts, and then you see the dormancy symptoms on two genotypes of summer under ambient light in greenhouse at Brookings, South Dakota, just a couple days ago. Okay, this is from regrowth that was came from the harvest that was made on August 26th. So they're starting to go dormant now, but this is way late into the fall. And there's variation for degree of dormancy among genotypes. So these, we have these eight genotypes from these four different collection dates. And so they show quite a bit of variation in the degree of dormancy response to ambient day length at this time of the year. And interestingly, the heavily smutted plants on the left, far pot there, show lower dormancy through the fall period. They eventually go dormant, but they're slower to get there. Okay, so talk a little bit about the effect of a disease on the photobiology of these plants. When I was out there collecting these plants, I didn't know I was collecting a smutted plant, okay? But just serendipity, it came along with us. And so that's good, because now, unfortunately, I'm starting to see smut in some of the other genotypes too, but it's not really serious yet. But the one genotype that came in, that one, almost all of the tillers are smutted. So the smut is characterized in field by precocious heading and plump non-flowering spikelets, and we see the same thing in the greenhouse. Smutted tillers headed about 30 days before the healthy tillers. Smutted plants headed freely on initial spring growth and on summer early autumn growth, okay, as opposed to the healthy plants, which do not head after being harvested in the fall. So smutted plants go dormant, but usually later than healthy plants. So if we take a look at smutted plants versus healthy plants in the initial emergence in the spring, you see that's the second one in from the left and the fourth one in from the left. You can see that the panicles emerge very early on, okay? So the disease pretty much takes over the machinery of the plant and operates it to its advantage. And then you see it's way advanced. If you see your plants coming up quickly in the spring, and you look for precocious heads that are pretty short, that's a good sign that you've got smutted plants. So this shows you how fast these smutted plants can grow in the fall. This is a late summer regrowth tillers headed about 20 days after harvest on 26th of August. Size of the panicles comparable to those on spring tillers. So this thing just responds rapidly to that cutting in the fall and sends up these tillers with these smutted heads that are comparable to what it produced in the spring. Now the healthy plants obviously had most of their reproductive production during the initial tillers, with very little, and if it is there, it probably is just sort of inadvertent or accidental. And so here you see the comparison of the smutted panicles on the left and a healthy, which is very rare now, but we do have a few plants that are trying to produce some panicles now from the regrowth, healthy but very diminutive, maybe 5 to 10 spikelets is all you'll see. But they do flower, having been harvested on August 26th in this warm environment. They come back with some pillars, and a few of them produce a few small panicles. So, in conclusion, these results identified a phenological behavior pattern in summer switchgrass in response to a dramatic temperature change that may impart a competitive advantage in mixed stands of perennial species managed for forage, biomass, or conservation purposes. So I'm just thinking in terms of, if it does warm up and we have something like summer, who can move its phenology earlier on into to the growing season, maybe that would give it a competitive advantage. And this is, I should mention that there's been a lot of this work done with transplanting switchgrass from the north to the south. Okay, when that happens, you're taking it out of its area of photoperiod adaptation, and you're taking it south, and those plants usually don't do very well. In fact, they'll head and flower very early, but a lot of times they don't even survive, okay? And so this is just a little different approach to it by looking at warming up the environment in the area of the optimum photoperiod. So the ability to change flowering time depending on spring weather could be an indicator of potential success of species under rapid climate change. And we're very grateful for having been supported over the years, and it's been many years, I should mention, by series for sponsored research, and then North Central Sun Grant, the DOE, NEPA, South Dakota Experiment Station, and the ARS have helped us out, and we're glad to participate in collaborative efforts. Thank you.